Tarry here, where the stories never grow old, and you hear something new every time they are told and it comes clear. So tarry here, where it doesn't matter your age, and when we gather round the table, we all take the stage year after year. So tarry here.
Welcome to the Enlightened Radio Storytelling Hour at enlightenedradio.org. This is Fanny Crawford.
And Stash Steokowski.
Woo! Wow. Our theme today is potluck. We each, the two of us, have no idea what's going to happen on the radio today. We'll see.
Yeah.
Today is Monday, August 28th. It's a special day for several people that are important to me. Today's my brother's birthday.
Yay, and, Doug.
Yeah, yay, Doug. And
oh, you want me to say my birthday?
Yes, I do.
Well, that's being a little braggadocio, I guess. Today's my birthday. Yay, I'm happy.
Hey, you when know? You've had as many as you have, you need to pay attention.
Oh, my goodness. And more than I would have imagined in a million years. Can't believe it. I'm not kidding, you know. I mean, I think it's for four children who had parents. My mom died at 57, almost 58. My dad died at 68, almost 69. Okay, my sister lived until just before her 90th birthday. My oldest brother lived until he was six months past his 83rd birthday. Second older brother, who is now 85, lives in Catonsville in assisted living. And I just turned 82. That is, to me, that's bizarre for kids born in the 20s and 30s and 41.
Well, especially, congratulations.
I know, especially with our behaviors. I mean, you know. I used to eat thousands of calories a day because I was a runner, and I wasn't really like a serious, I mean, I was a serious runner, but I wasn't a, you know, great runner, but I did it for just for conditioning and strength and that. And so I thought it was perfectly reasonable. Go and get half a dozen chocolate donuts and a large coffee after I ran 5 to 10 miles in the morning and take it to my classroom so I could eat it after I took my shower and put on clean clothes, and ate 3 or 4 healthy meals a day. Not always healthy.
Well, you did something right.
I did. I just made it.
Well, I'm a little bereft because I missed speak this month entirely. I just had too much other things that conflicted and I didn't make it. So I want you to tell me about what happened and then tell us about what's coming up.
Well, I'm bereft also about speak. I watched it on Tuesday on the Zoom, intended to go on Wednesday, couldn't handle it. That was right about the time speak was going on is when the dark angel, shouldn't say the darkened, the cloud came around and said, oh, he's feeling pretty good. Why don't we teach him a lesson? So anyway, Dolores Hydock was just marvelous. And I was really sorry I didn't get to see her in person because she did 2 different programs. The first one was wonderful. And the second was going to be a more serious program. Not necessarily serious, but a special program. More special than the first, I guess I should say. Anyway, what's coming up is now I cannot, unless something changes, right now I am homebound. I may only get in the car to go to doctor's appointments. So.
And we are already missing.
Well, let me tell you, I'm going to miss your mother. Tell Miriam I apologize.
Well, she'll be here tonight. Today. You'll get to at least say hello.
Good. So, you know, because I, as much as I love speak, I love going to stories and around, because I feel like I contribute a little bit by sitting there and being like, who is a Shylock, the Merchant of Venice? Is that the guy who was the money lender or something?
Uh huh.
Yeah.
You're not lending money though, are you? Because
oh no,
if you are.
No,
then I need
I'm
to
collecting money, but it makes me feel like. Why am I collecting money here? You know, I can't help what my brain thinks sometimes. I am a victim of having a fast synapses, and I'm looking forward to talking to my doctor that I'm being treated for, my neurologist, because he's working on me getting better at remembering things. And lately I've been remembering so many things, I wish that my brain would shut up for a while. You know, but coming up, the big deal for the year, Diane Macklin, who
indeed.
Is the, oh, just incredible. And I'm looking forward to that. I'll watch the Tuesday performance, but I won't be able to go to the Wednesday one unless I'm cleared by then. Who knows? Maybe they'll clear me and I'll be a walker. I mean, I'll be released from the house.
I hope so.
The ladies who came last week gave me exercises, which I did. Simple exercises that at least made me think I was being worn out, which would be ridiculous because I could do all the exercises in probably less than 15 minutes, if that. And that was taking a breathing break. But that's what happens when, you know, muscles aren't used enough. And I do go around the house three times with my walker. And I set my alarm for every hour so that if I've been sitting for more than, you know, up to an hour, I get up and go around the house with the walker. So anyway, and this is a special day. Not only is it my birthday, it is also the day that Terry has kind of declared as getting rid of a lot of stuff day.
Uh-oh.
Yeah, Terry put out 6 old lamps and, you know, lamp the bases and everything, wires, everything out at the curb today. They disappeared before the school children were gone into school, and they weren't taken by kids. You know, adult parents walking the kids to school. Says, oh, boy, that's neat. And I took books out of my bookcase this morning for Terry to put in the little library along on her walk. And even some books I had that were, you know, really nice books with stories, like a single story, real nice color and everything. But I don't have anybody to give them to who's a relative, my grandchildren. Aren't interested in those kind of books. They read other things, but, you know, so far. Anyway, so I thought, why not? And this one little library in front of a house has a children's library next to it, which is, I think, is just wonderful. And so I took a couple of the books that I haven't even glanced at in years. And they're very colorful, and they're a great story. And Terry put them in the children's library this morning. So that's great. And those libraries are a big help. My brother Tony loves to read, and he has a library card from the local library near where he lives. However, the library is being renovated. Who ever heard of closing a library completely? The area has, people have to travel miles to go to a library. And Tony liked going to the library and being able to pick out his books. And, you know, but now what I've been doing is snagging books out of the little libraries. And some of them, like the one that on Shepherd University's campus, on where the Wellness Center is, They, you know, a lot of adults go into that wellness center, and a lot, of course, a lot of students too, but and they're adults, sort of. But they have they put some good books in there, and I've taken some to my brother before, and then down there he passes them on to people that he lives with in the home, and if no one's interested in them, then we take them down in Baltimore someplace and stick them in one little library. If we have some,
okay. So before we leave Speak entirely, can you give us the website?
SpeakStoryseries.com, and you should check that out because on the 11th and 12th and 13th, not the 11th, the 12th and 13th of September, Diane Macklin is going to do her commissioned story. She was the person chosen in the commission contest. A large group of people, and they were weaned down by people reading the proposals and then passing them on, and finally Diane was one selected, and she's a great storyteller, very entertaining, and I'm hoping that I'll be able to get out of the house for that. I don't think I can justify going to storytelling. It's good for my health. It'll be fun to see her. So
then she has a full house.
Right. And then that's yours. Next. So Diane Macklin, SpeakStoryseries.com. You can donate, you can support us, you can get a season ticket. You can just write us a note and say thanks a lot.
Right.
And that'd be fine.
And I do want to say thank you to Andy Hoffett-Irwin for opening our show with Carrie here as original composition. We love you, Andy. Thank you, yes. Thank you, thank you.
Yes.
Do you want to start us off with a story?
I think I would like to. I wonder if I told you of the change I made in my life recently as far as storytelling goes?
Not that I remember.
No, okay. I'm no longer on the board of Speak.
Oh, I didn't know that.
I decided to resign from the board because of health issues, mm-hmm. which are, you know, have multiplied lately. And and just almost immediately after I resigned, within a few days, I wound up in the hospital. It almost seemed like, probably a good decision. Yeah, you know, so, but I feel fine now. And I'm on home health care, which is kind of nice. Sort of nice to be babied, but I don't like the fact that I can't go out and get in the car. I guess I could go out in the garage and sit in the car.
That will come, one step at a time.
Oh, yeah, I know. And I'm being patient. And the ladies who came last week and did some stuff with me thought I was doing real well. And one of the things that they asked us, one nurse said, a physical therapist said, do you want to get off the walker? I said, yes, I've only been using it for a short while. And I'd like to get back to my cane and then throw the cane away. And so anyway, she said, well, that was a perfect answer. Because some people would say, no, I'm happy with it, you know, and I don't want to be happy with, you know, having to do that.
So is that what your story's about?
No. Here's my story's about potluck. And I would think this, I'm going to say a little short thing about when you told me potluck and I wrote it down. I was thinking potluck. Well, you know what? Potluck is a great thing for lots of people today, nowadays. And in different states, I don't know how many, but a lot of different states, as of July 1st, I think, a lot of different states made marijuana legal. And talk about pot luck. You know, I mean, there are stoners out there who are going singing and dancing and said, boy, 30 years too late, 50 years too late, actually a whole lot of time, because marijuana was classified as one of the high thing drugs back in the 30s. And no one had been able to get any Congress to move on that, to budge even a little bit, but somebody did it now. So here we are, and potluck is in town. Okay, so that's not my story. Here's my story. A storytelling workshop. I went to a storytelling workshop when I lived in Pittsburgh. I've been to storytelling workshops in all kinds of places, as far away as Arkansas and Pittsburgh and all kinds of places. But I was invited to come to one in Frederick. And I was living in Marysville, just outside of Pittsburgh. And so I figured out all the best arrangements I could. Got a hotel room. Turned out like I could have gotten away with not having a hotel room, but I did. I got a hotel room. Figured out the traveling distance and drove down on a Friday evening. And got there, I think, decent time, was able to go out and get a meal, nice room. Read a final email, and then it dawned on me that I didn't have my usual backup system, my wife Terry, because I was supposed to take something to the workshop to share with everybody else, and it's supposed to be enough for 2 days, two meals, two lunches, and or something. And that's, it said that in the email I got, two lunches or something, you know. What am I going to, you know, here I was in a hotel in Shepherdstown. So, and it was now dark, and I was thinking, where? So I went to the desk and I asked, is there a place in town, you know, like a donut shop, you know, or, you know, a little bit better than that, maybe a place you go get coffee and they have cake and donuts. And I said, yeah. And he told me right where it was. Okay, so the next morning, I got up. It said that they opened at 8 o'clock. The guy told me that. So I got there. I was waiting at 7:45. I was at the donut shop and waiting. And sure enough, at 8 o'clock, they opened the door. I went in. Boy, they had all kind of good things. So I got. This is a number of years now, but I got a pretty good sized box of donuts, and I thought, if we eat them all today, I'll just get some more tomorrow. But it turned out to be just wonderful, because people really like the donuts. The only thing bad about the donuts was, and I can't remember who did this, but because there were a group of us, I think, I want to say maybe at least 8, maybe 9 ladies and a few men. Okay. That was the workshop where I met you, Fanny. And it was a wonderful workshop.
I remember.
Such a good time. Yeah.
I even remember the donuts.
Yeah, good. And anyway, so hop in the car. I drove down, got the donuts, anything. Anyway, and then looked at my directions, because I was going to Susan's house, which was a little farm, on a farm. That's what I thought it was, a little farm. It had been a farm. And so I followed the directions. And the directions were pretty easy to follow outside of Frederick, you know. And then I got to where I had to make a turn and go under a bridge. And then I had to make another turn, and the roads start changing to becoming less and less and less like Route 70. In fact, they became less and less and less like Route anything. Finally saw a wooden sign that pointed to the left, and it looked like a decent road. Drove off to the left, went up, had to follow carefully, make sure I didn't go up anyone's lane, because a number of lanes led off of that little path, and finally made a right-hand turn, and there it was, sitting right, not quite at the edge, but near a very nice field, and lovely little house. I would say cottage, but I don't know what the right word for it was, but it looked real nice. And I didn't notice any cars. And that it might have been because I don't always pay attention to things as well as I should. But anyway, I got up near the house and I thought, whoa, maybe I'm the first one here. And because I thought that, I thought, oh, where do I park? And to the right side of the house, there looked like a small driveway through the grass. And so I drove to the right of the house, figuring that I would see the parking spot or spots. Well, I didn't, so I went past the house and I was behind the house. And so I drove around the house, all the way around, and back to the front, and thought, well, there's got to be a place to park. And it didn't dawn on me to look to my right. I drove around the house again. And finally, when I got back the second time, thinking on the second trip, I was thinking maybe I was just so excited about finding the place and getting the donuts that I just didn't notice the cars, which would be kind of crazy since cars are at least as big as mine. So it dawned on me I should park on the other side of the entrance thing. So I did. And then I realized there were already two cars there. I don't know how I didn't pay attention to that. But Oh, the donuts seemed to be a big hit. And also, I was greeted by, I knocked on the door and heard somebody say, come in, walked in a little further, and there were two people sitting at the kitchen table. One very tall human being, who I knew who he was, of course, was Andy Offutt Irwin, and I had seen him at Jonesboro. And in fact, I had hired him once to perform Fairfield Bay at the storytelling festival that I started there. Well, that's a whole nother story, which was interesting. But they were laughing and saying, what were you doing? And I said, I was looking for a place to park. And I remember Sue just looking at me very seriously and very kindly, just like a mom would look at a child who is confused about, you know, which door is the bathroom or something, and saying, where did you park now? And I said, right next to the two cars on the other side. And she said, oh, okay, so you did find a parking space. And she did that so kindly. And I out of the corner of my eye, I was watching Andy, and I was thinking, oh man, he's just collecting notes right now. He's going to put this in a story. I'm going to be some bozo in one of his stories.
He does tell that story. I've heard him tell the story.
Yeah. So anyway, it was nice. So I met Andy again and Susan, who I met both of them previously. We had donuts and coffee right away. They were happy to see the donuts. And I thought, okay, good, I made a great choice. But when lunchtime came, all this food came out, put on a table for us to share. And I realized that I was the only one who brought something that probably wasn't considered healthy. And in the afternoon, one of the ladies that was there, and who became a good friend of mine, and she was from Pittsburgh, said to me, this is a lady by the name of Marcia. We were talking just in little groups of ones or twos, threes, you know. The groups of ones were very lonely. Anyway, Marcia said, what made you bring donuts? I said, well, I thought donuts are always good. Donuts and coffee, we're going to probably have coffee. And she said, most of the time people bring regular food, you know, like salads or something like that. And I said, so I get something for tomorrow? She said, if you can, yeah, you know, go to the grocery store and get something. And I said, like what? She said, potato salad or coleslaw, you know, something like that. Oh, okay, great. So my lack of awareness about potlucks was fixed. And I went to a number of workshops at Frederick with Susan at that house and then at her new residence in the next few years. And that's what I did every time. I brought potato salad and sometimes another one of those kind of salads, you know, picnic salads. And so I didn't feel like a complete failure, you know. And now I know just what to get depending on who's there. And well,
Some of your donuts did get eaten.
Oh, they did get eaten. And on Sunday, I took what was left. There were a few left, and I took them in the car for my trip back home.
And you ate them all.
And probably did. And recently, and this is just a side thing, I have seen pictures from about those times. You know, I don't know, 8 years ago, 9 years ago, maybe. And I was a chunky monkey. I am about 35 pounds lighter than I was then.
And now we know why.
I think. I'm not allowed to buy donuts every morning. Right.
That's so,
thank you.
Good story. That's a good potluck story, too.
Yeah.
Wow. Well, you are listening to the Enlightened Radio Storytelling Hour at enlightenradio.org. I'm Fanny Crawford.
And I'm Stas Ziolkowski.
And we're just telling stories off the cuff. We have no idea what we're going to tell today. That's why it's called potluck. But Stas is so clever with language and storytelling that he has already told two stories that really were about potluck so far. All right. So I'm going to tell one. And you were asking about my mother. And of course, I'm going to be portraying my mother later on today on Monday, this evening at Stories in the Round. And so I'm going to do one of those stories since it won't be up and posted until after my performance this evening. So, Mom, are you here? I'm here. Yes. Well, sit down right here, Mom, and we'll get started. Are we ready? Hello, Mr. Z. Hello, Sash.
Hello, Miriam. It's a pleasure to see you again.
Well, I hope it's a pleasure to listen. We're not sure about that yet. I'm going to start with a little song. I dreamed I saw Joe Hill last night, alive as you or me. Says I, but Joe, you're 10 years dead. I never die. Says he, I never died, says he. The copper bosses killed you, Joe. They shot you, Joe, says I. Takes more than guns to kill a man, says Joe. I didn't die, says Joe. I didn't die. And standing there as big as life and smiling with his eyes, says Joe, what they forgot to kill went on to organize, went on to organize. Where working folks are out on strike, Joe Hill is at their side. Joe Hill is at their side. From San Diego up to Maine, in every mine and mill, where working folks defend their rights, it's there you'll find Joe Hill. It's there you'll find Joe Hill. I heard you asking questions, Stash, about Joe Hill. So I did have a little bit prepared in case people didn't know who he was. I don't have my papers all in front of me. I did bring a pile of files with me. I'm going to be telling stories from these files. But Joe Hill was from Sweden. He was from a poor family in Sweden. His parents died when he was very young. There were six children. They had to quit school. Some of them were even younger than Joe. A couple were older. And they all went to work, mostly farming and industrial work. They had the family farm, but they had to sell it because they had no money and no one to help them run it. They all split up, the family split up and went to different places around Sweden. Joe and his brother, I think his name was Paul, came to the United States. And Joe became something of a traveler to find work and eventually started helping organize unions. So his bosses didn't like him. And he was framed for murder and killed by a firing squad in Colorado. But he was beloved as a union organizer and an all-around good guy. And so he was immortalized in this song. That was 1915 when he was shot. I'm singing that song because I want to talk about my college career. College was the start of my political education. I went to Brooklyn College in 1937, New York City. And at that time, Brooklyn College student body and the faculty was a center for radical thinking and included several self-described Marxists and many other fine, open-minded teachers that I admired and respected. I graduated from Brooklyn College in 1937 and got my first full-time job as library clerk in the Brooklyn Public Library. From that time till June 1940, I was also enrolled in library studies at Columbia University, which was an hour subway ride each way from my family's apartment in Brooklyn, 3 days a week for 3 years while I was working full time. That was not that unusual. If you wanted to go to school, to college, or advanced degree, most people had to work full time while they did that. But during that time, I joined the American Labor Party and canvassed door to door to help elect Mayor Fiorello Raffaele Enrico LaGuardia. And that was my first big political engagement. But then in 1939, I joined the Communist Party USA, recruited by friends from college. Now, the 1941 Nazi invasion of the Soviet Union threw me into a tailspin. I was completely unprepared because I had convinced myself that the Nazi-Soviet non-aggression pact was a preventive measure of the Soviets to prevent German expansion into Russian territory. It hadn't occurred to me that it was an opportunity for the Soviets to build up defenses against the Nazis. And that's when I decided I had been much too dependent on the Daily Worker as a news source. And thereafter, I vowed to read a lot more publications. I was a librarian. I felt obligated to maintain a broad and unbiased perspective on world events, and I felt I'd failed. I left the party then in 1941, just felt like I didn't know enough to hold my own there. Now, when I received my master's degree in library science in 1940, I moved from library clerk at the Brooklyn Library to a position as professional librarian and was one of a small group at the Brooklyn Public Library determined to organize a union through the state and municipal workers local, who had already successfully organized within the New York City Public Library. Well, we soon learned, this little group of ours, how different and entirely independent of each other the two institutions, the Brooklyn Public Library and the New York City Public Library, were and still are. Brooklyn was much more conservative administration, and employees seemed quite content with that. So our very small group of pro-union employees, only 15 or 20 of us out of 300 to 500 employees, never made any headway at all. Well, in September 1943, I enlisted and became a WAC. I joined the Women's Army Corps at age 27. My motivation was less principled political ideas and realities, more about personal and social connections. Good friends of mine were enlisting, talking passionately about the need to help the war effort to make a difference. And then my first serious romantic interest spoke with me at length about the possibility of serving together through the war. Well, I was not naive enough to believe that was likely, but he did cause me to take stock of how and why I might want to contribute to the international efforts against tyranny. Now, I have to admit that a major factor was likely the opportunity to move away from home. I never served overseas, but that was not a major disappointment. I did get to travel and learn new skills. I went first to training camp in Conway, Arkansas, and then served at Camp Shelby near Hattiesburg. And I brought my Camp Shelby file with me. It's not very fat. There's not very many things in it, but I might refer to a few things in there. Camp Shelby's near Hattiesburg. And at that time, it was a still very segregated Mississippi. That was challenging for me, and an education all in itself. Summers in Mississippi were a big shock for the weather alone, like nothing I had ever experienced. And I adjusted slowly, but I did adapt. The strangeness of living under Jim Crow laws was less disruptive to me personally, but I understood that was because I was part of the privileged group. I was considered a white person in that community. And the constant reminders of the social and economic inequities of life in the southern state got me thinking about the less extreme, but still very visible racial stratification in New York and the rest of the country. They were really only different from Mississippi in degree. There were laws saying what African Americans and other people of color could and could not do. I was forced to think more deeply about the stratification and inequities I saw all around me and recognize the benefits to some of us under this system and the horrible costs to the rest. As far as my work at Camp Shelby, I enjoyed most of my work assignments. They were mostly specialized jobs. The last one that I held for a long time was the information and education section of a station hospital. I was teaching and advising soldiers who were about to be discharged. These were all men, presumably preparing them for the world that they were going to face in the post-war era. Irony, information and education was, gossip said, where the army placed soldiers known to be communists, apparently because they were believed to be too untrustworthy to handle weapons. Now, that never appeared to me to be the case, at least not for my assignment. It seemed more chance that I was working in the same unit as a man who had been an active Communist Party USA member in New York City. We were friendly, and I became good friends with his wife, who had traveled south to live with him, and they renewed my interest in the party. One of the most interesting assignments I had with the station hospital was administering Rorschach tests for returning GIs. The tests were just ink blots, cards with ink blots on them, of many different types. I'd show them to the men, to each individual, one at a time, and ask them to talk about what they saw. And then I would code their answers. It was not a very predictable or routine job. I had to establish rapport with each person and record exactly what they said. And the interviews were then sent to psychologists at the hospital who would interpret the men's comments and recommend next steps as the men prepared for re-entry into the general population. Now, I've never been sure if this work really made a difference. Sometimes it seemed like hokum, magical thinking to me. But maybe the test's results were reliable indicators of any individual's future success or current mental health. But it was always interesting work, and I had many fascinating conversations with the men I interviewed. Of course, it was all confidential conversation and reports, so I had to think about what I heard on my own. There was conversation with friends, a little bit tangential about this work, comparing notes just from my own curiosity, but I couldn't talk about individual cases or things I had learned about people. Now I have a file here of photographs, and I still have many, many photographs taken by my friends at Camp Shelby and by my brother, Hank, my sister, Irene, who's 18. She was 18 months younger than me. She enlisted soon after me in the Navy as a wave. And Hank went into the Army a year later when he was 18. Irene was mostly stationed not far from New York City. Hank was eventually stationed in Alaska as a radio operator, but managed to visit me twice in Mississippi while he was still in training. He was stationed at Keesler, which was in Mississippi and not that far away from Shelby. These photographs remind me what a full life experience and an education it was to serve as a WAC for 4 years. Some of the women who befriended me there became lifelong friends, though we mostly live far from each other afterwards. And some outside of the continental United States, we managed to maintain contact and even visit back and forth a bit over the years. The best part of my time in the Army was the friends I made there, what I learned from them, how close we felt while we were working together, and a few of whom are still good friends, though most are gone now. I'm 90-something today. In 2010, and it's been a long time, but I still have their letters. Now, at Hattiesburg, I heard a lot of music that was new to me, most often because some of the women in my circle were talented amateur musicians, and there were few who had small record collections with them or passed records on to others in our group when they were discharged or moved to different camps. Dancing was a big social scene too, and I danced more at Shelby than I ever had before in New York. And that was a wholly unexpected pleasure that only increased when I finally got back to New York social life again. I remember Hank, my brother, visiting me at Camp Shelby. He came from Keetzler, which was in Biloxi, Mississippi, more than once, I think. And he took so many photographs, mostly glamour shots, something he did with the lenses to make them soft, to make the picture seductive looking. I was not so happy about that. I was not one of his girlfriends. I was 10 years older than my brother. And anyway, for most of them, most of the photos, I'm in uniform or in fatigues. I just knew there was nothing glamorous about those fatigues or about the war in general. But I do love some of the photos I have of myself with friends at Conway in Arkansas, where I was in training school. I'm usually wearing summer uniforms in those pictures. They were much more comfortable than the dress uniforms, but still not as comfortable as regular clothing. The fabric was stiff and scratchy, but it was wartime. We were there to do important work and tried not to complain about the little things. At the end of the war, we, my WAC friends, made plans to visit each other. I went to Birmingham, Alabama, and visited one of them there at her home, and another friend in Washington, D.C. I still have those photos someplace. I don't think that I would enlist in the Army again based on my experience in those years, but I did all right. I was not harmed by the experience, and I made good connections. I started to see the world differently, to see a different kind of reality, and not least because some of my Army assignments provided experience that helped me get a wonderful job when I was discharged in 1946. I don't know that I have time to tell you all about that now, but I will talk about that tonight, Monday night, because Fanny says I am to tell stories at the Unitarian Universalist Church of Hagerstown. I am still not understanding why she goes to this church, but you know, more about that later.
Thank you, Miriam. It was delightful. It is always
fun to be here on the radio with you.
Right. I have a question, if you don't mind.
Oh, please ask your question. It makes everything more interesting for me.
Well, when you talked about Joe Hill at the beginning, I didn't know anything about, I still don't know anything about it except with your song, but you did say that he was wrongly accused of murder. And was that proven?
There many, many, many years later, a friend of his came forward with his alibi. She was a woman who was dating him because he was something of a public figure and he was trying to protect her. He would not give her name. He was asked for his alibi and he wouldn't. He said he wasn't where they said he had been at the murder site, but he wouldn't say where he had been. And she came forward many years later. John Case, you probably know the whole story.
The Long Black Veil.
That's the folk song, yes. It's probably like that.
Wow. So why was he keeping her name out? Because he thought she might get injured? Or was she married or something?
She was married to another.
to another labor guy?
I don't remember who she was married to.
But there were many, many public figures who stepped forward to defend him. Woodrow Wilson signed a petition to free him. And many other people all over the world, it was a scandal. Much of the country believed that the copper bosses had framed him because he was trying to organize their employees.
Well, the miners thought so. Right. So, but interesting.
Boy,
there's still his grave is a shrine. There are regularly people who go there to sing that song for him, and crowds come. He's still considered a martyr. His final words, well, one of the men on the firing squad claimed that the man who shouted fire, gave the order fire, was Joe Hill himself.
Wow.
When they fired, they didn't know who had shouted, but afterwards he knew his voice and said it was him. But his last words before that were, "Don't grieve, organize." And cool. He went out still defiant and a labor man till the end.
So did anything ever happen to the woman other than?
No, people? She was a, people knew they were friends, but it was towards the end of her life. I think her husband had died. Wow. And it was years and years later.
Jeez, that's demoralizing.
Well, it started out that way, certainly. But now when you talk about Joe Hill, a lot of people know who he was, and he makes people smile.
Yeah, I should read about Joe Hill.
The quotes in the song about what he says is very close to the records from his public statements during the trial.
Incredible. Yeah, that is just a scary thing.
Yeah, there was a lot of that going on in those days. There still are. It's not the same, but
It's fascinating to me because the woman apparently was interested enough in him to cheat on her husband. However, she wasn't interested in enough to help save his life.
I think it was very complicated I don't know. I wasn't there. These are all these are legends now.
Right.
She is quoted, and she was part of the labor movement as well. So she was probably weighing what the costs and benefits were.
Well, it would have been other people involved too, probably. So,
yeah.
I posted the Joe Hill's last will.
Yeah.
It's easy to decide, for there is nothing to divide. My kin don't need to fuss and moan. Moss does not cling to a rolling stone. My body, if I could choose, I want it to ashes to reduce, and let the merry breezes blow my dust to where some flowers grow. Perhaps some fading flower then would come to life and bloom again. This is my last and final will. Good luck to all of you, Joe Hill.
Wow. That is wonderful.
One of the reasons he was so beloved was he was a songwriter. And so he would, any protest, any party, any gathering, any meeting, he could come up with things like that. And
he would change the words to ordinary hymns that people knew, so that they always knew the tune. He just added, rewrote the lyrics.
So did anyone suffer any kind of problems or any kind of recriminations because they were guilty of they were, did anyone actually become found guilty of his death?
It was a firing squad. You mean?
Yeah, I mean,
the accused, then
the ones who, you know, found, no. Somebody found him guilty and testified, and those people should have suffered in some way.
There wasn't much of a civil government beyond the copper industry up there. So
it was a company. Well,
I mean, yeah, I mean, and it never made it past any appeal, you know, to, so it stopped right there. And, you know, yeah, so it might have been, I'm not even sure what the status of Montana as a state or
Colorado.
I guess it was a state by then. Yeah, it would have been, but you know, there was a lot of, there weren't that many death penalty cases that made it all the way up into the federal level, actually.
Well,
I mean, now they do because of a lot of precedent, but.
Makes you wonder if you got, you know. I don't think I've ever done anything that I would be worried about if, you know, going to jail or something. But I do know that once it starts, you really can get caught up in its crazy stuff, you know, especially if you make enemies in the big companies.
Yeah, he had been thrown out of many towns before that.
Yeah.
It wasn't like he was not used to being abused.
Right.
Well, I mean, there's a lot of, and there was a lot of literature. John Steinbeck's Grapes of Wrath, you know, story was, had a kind of similar themes to the biography and the legend of Joe Hill. Anyway, but great stories, guys. You know. And your deal with your mother is just marvelous, Manny.
She was marvelous. She's still marvelous. She drives me crazy. I hear her in my head all the time.
But you do.
So
that's good.
Well, that's thank good. You. Thank you, Sash.
Thank you. That was wonderful.
I think we are just about out of time.
I see 57 minutes.
All right. You've been listening to the Enlightened Radio Storytelling Hour at enlightenedradio.org. This is Fanny Crawford.
And Stas Ziolkowski.
We are independent community radio broadcasting from Bolivar, West Virginia, Martinsburg, West Virginia, and Hagerstown, Maryland. This Enlightened Radio Storytelling Hour offers our listeners a window into the world of telling by traditional and non-traditional tellers, encouraging our listening community to share, preserve, and expand all of our stories. Thanks for listening and stay tuned for.
Let's see, this is Monday. So this is Country Music Day, I believe. Yes, it is.
That's right. You told us that last week.
And about to resume the stream. Yeah. Anyway,
right.
Thank you guys for, I'm glad I figured out why my microphone wasn't picking up in the beginning, but okay. All right. Take care, everybody.
Next week, same time.
Yeah, 10 o'clock.